Coming up next on Through the Eyes of Women, we'll be transported to the deepest heart of Appalachia. Join me, Corinne Fregoni, in a conversation with Kentucky native C.D. Collins, storyteller, poet, and musician with a message. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program for, about, and by women. News and interviews concerning the lives and times of women, local, national, and international.
Kentucky native C.D. Collins follows the storytelling traditions of the South. She writes, sings, and combines the spoken word with live music. Her fiction has appeared in numerous literary magazines, including Story Quarterly, Salamander, Phoebe, and the Pennsylvania Review. Blue Land, a collection of short stories published in 2009, spirals from descriptions of ordinary people into their extraordinary inner spirits that endure with a will to survive. With her band Rockabetty, C.D. Collins has recorded her fourth album, Clean Coal, Big Lie. Her live performances feature songs and spoken word pieces that will transport you to the deepest heart of Appalachia, its troubles, unforgettable characters, and ineffable, endangered beauty. She has performed around the country, including the Berklee College of Music Performance Hall, Boston and New York Public Libraries, the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts, and most recently in March of this year in Humboldt County.
I want to take you on a journey deep into the hills. Up the hollows, into the mist, the mystery. To Hazard, Kentucky, the drumming heart of the universe. Where we have such treasure, the mountains, minerals, music, and the people of Appalachia. Where we used to die of black lung from deep mining, and now die of poverty and coal slurry in our water. Our women perish of cancers because there's no screening. And our children's lives are cut off by OxyContin. Because Hazard, Kentucky is where OxyContin was first introduced in the U.S. Because there is so much pain here. And the drug company said that OCs were not addictive, but they knew. You know they knew.
Welcome, C.D., to Through the Eyes of Women.
Howdy. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
We just played a piece from your C.D., Clean Coal, Big Lie, and it's called Hazard, which I assume is a small town in Kentucky.
That's right.
Tell us more about Hazard.
Hazard is in eastern Kentucky. It's in Perry County. I was writing about Hazard and realizing that it really is the nexus of a lot of different things that are going on that represent eastern Kentucky. Hazard is the site where a lot of mountaintop removal is happening, mountaintop removal for coal. It's the place where OxyContin was first introduced in the United States. There's a lot of beautiful music that comes out of there. There's a lot of wonderful medicine in the mountains. They also have a problem with a high rate of cancer. They have a very short lifespan there. When Johnson had the war on poverty, we got a lot of attention at that point, a lot of pictures, but the money was based on population, and so there wasn't a lot of money that came in to solve our problems. So the poverty that we have is intractable, and the coal mining, although it used to provide jobs, dangerous jobs, at this point what happens is that dynamite is cheaper than hiring people, and so they have these enormous machines that knock the mountains down, the top of the mountain off into the valley. And if you go to Hazard, you'll see that the town is very depressed, and you'll drive down the road and you see these beautiful mountains beside the road. But if you get in a plane, you rise above those outer mountains and you see it looks like a moonscape because of the mountaintop removal.
It sounds similar to what you might see in Humboldt County, in Washington State, Oregon, with forest clearing, where it looks all pristine along the roads, and if you fly over, there is total devastation with the trees being logged, the hills looking gray, mudslides. So I imagine there's something similar going on in Kentucky.
I think that Humboldt County and Kentucky have a lot in common.
Actually, OxyContin is another one. We happen to have one of the highest rates of pregnant women on narcotics. And I think there was a county in Kentucky that had the similar statistics. It might have been the one that Hazard is located in.
Hazard is in Perry County, and I've written several pieces. There's a place called Troublesome Creek in Hazard, and that is where a tribe of blue people flourished around the turn of the century. And I do have a song, The Blue Folks of Troublesome Creek, and that's in Perry County. I have written a story about a man in World War I, and he is from Storm King, and that's in Perry County. So I'm fascinated with that area.
Blue people, that's very intriguing. Are these people really blue?
They are blue. And what happened was that there was a French orphan who came to Perry County on a land grant around 1860, and he married a local woman, and they had seven children, and four of them had blue skin. And the reason that their skin was blue is because they were missing an enzyme. It was a recessive gene, and so their children were missing this enzyme called diaphorase, which turns your blood red again when it's oxygenated. And so the blood stayed dark, even though they were healthy. You're seeing through their white skin their dark blood, and it makes their skin blue, a beautiful blue. And they felt ashamed of themselves and didn't want to be seen, and so they would hide. And this was at a time when there weren't that many families in eastern Kentucky in that county, and so they proliferated during that time. And then when the railroad came in and a lot of other people came in, they dispersed, but you still will find blue people if you can, and they still are ashamed of themselves. They're made fun of, and they don't want to be in public. It's still a painful thing. They're the smallest minority in the world, and it's hard to be a minority.
You've written a book called Blue Land. Is that after the blue people?
It's not. Blue Land is, I've got a little blue thing going. Blue Land is based on a character in Hazard, Kentucky, and she has a drinking problem, and she has a friend come in that she hadn't seen for a long time, and they have a very different view of the past. And so they're sitting out in her backyard, which is pretty ramshackle, and she has a beehive, and she has Christmas lights and a little fountain, and she's like, we're in Blue Land. And Blue Land is where delusions might thrive. So that's the title piece. It's a deep character study of a woman in eastern Kentucky, but I'm writing fiction. So my characters are alloys of different characters and their experiences. And I believe that fiction is where you can get at the truth. Like Marilynne Robinson said, facts explain nothing. On the contrary, it's the facts that need an explanation. And so I write fiction to protect myself from lawsuits and to free me to look for the truth.
Well, sometimes they say that the truth sometimes is more unbelievable than fiction.
Yes.
You mention a number of people that you've encountered. Tell me some that have influenced you and your writing and your art.
I'm interested in people's stories, and we all have our stories. One of my stories, the one that I read at the New York Public Library, is called San Vergüenza, and it's about a cocaine addict who works in a canning factory in California, in Stockton, California, and she is a functional, she shoots cocaine, and writing that story, and then there's a lot of metaphors about bullfighting, and we're in the canning factory, and I had to get a lot of, do a lot of research, and just writing the story, because I don't like needles, and I would have to lie down as I wrote part of the story, but that was also a combination of different characters. It makes people comfortable to think that what I'm writing is memoir, and to say, oh, I know that, I know who you're talking about, and I know your mom, and did your mom really kill those dogs, and questions like that, and that they're like, how did you get off cocaine? And I say I was never on cocaine. But if I'm writing convincingly, then I believe that to change the world, because I'm doing some political activism in my work, you do it by moving people, not by convincing people, not by bombarding, not by arguing, but by moving people.
So you feel that art is a means to motivate and inspire rather than a lecture.
It's our hope. It's our hope for change.
Do you think the message inspires the art or the art inspires the message?
When I was about 4 years old, I realized that my vision of the world was not what the conventional wisdom was saying. And so I started to write at that point to describe the variance between what I was hearing and what was accepted and what I was seeing. So my responsibility ends at doing the research, knowing what I'm talking about, so that if I'm writing, even though I'm writing fiction, it's really important to get things right. So I'm writing the story that I want to tell. And I'm not doing it for an audience. I'm not doing it to manipulate, to persuade. I'm doing it because this is what I feel and I believe. And it doesn't mean I don't run into trouble, because I run into trouble. When I premiered my album in my hometown, it caused trouble. Clean coal, big lie, that's going to cause trouble in Kentucky, because some people are what's known as friends of coal, people who are making money from coal, and they tend to rationalize what the consequences are, because it's supporting them, it's supporting their families, and they have the right to do that. And then there is this environmental devastation, so it was a problem. And some people boycotted my event, and a lot of people showed up for my event. So that's how I know I'm getting somewhere. I forget who said that. You know you're getting somewhere because you're stepping on people's toes. I'm not intentionally doing that, but who's going to say it if not me?
Well, there are a lot of assumptions and myths and probably misconceptions about the South. And if a Martian came to visit planet Earth with an open-ended curiosity, what would you tell them about where you grew up?
I would say that my culture is so complex that you have to really develop an eye and an ear. There's 120 counties in my state. And each county has a different accent. and if you really listen, you can hear those different accents. And that is partly because we're so cantankerous that, say, you're in City Hall in a certain county. Well, I just disagree with that, and me and my family are going to make another county. And they finally had to stop it because they were making so many counties with so many factions. I love going home. I always have this southern moment when I'm driving down from Boston, where things get more expansive, the road gets wider, people start smiling, they're not cutting you off. And I'll always have this southern moment when I come home. For example, my guitar player in my band is African American. He'd never been to Kentucky. And I was taking him down there for a show, and he was really scared. And he said, you know, CD, they told me that I'm going to get, you know, lynched down there. And I said, you know, I'll protect you. I'll protect you. And so he went down there, and within a couple of days, everybody in town had heard of Hodari and how talented he was and how cute he was. And he felt like he was treated really well and better than he was treated in Boston. I mean, we are a racist culture, but so are they in New England. It's just a very different, much more covert form of it. So our racism is right out there. My father was very racist. My mother was not. We talked about it. And so things are more direct in that way. But on the other hand, they're far more subtle. Our language is so metaphoric, so beautiful, and people have no idea what we're talking about. There are a lot of mores that you have to learn to read. And if I'm gone for 6 months, I'll come back and not have my footing. And it'll take me a few days to really get into how you don't hurt someone's feelings, the manners, the Kentucky goodbye, which lasts like 2 hours. And the last thing you say after a Kentucky goodbye is, well, come go home with us. So very different culture than Boston.
Some of the more obvious ways that culture is transmitted is through food. What kind of food do you eat in the South?
Heart attack food.
Let me take a break before we get into your recipes.
Okay.
You're listening to Through the Eyes of Women, and I'm Corinne Fregoni, and you are listening to C.D. Collins, who's talking about her home, Appalachia.
So what we eat, some of us are still eating what we were eating when we were getting up and plowing the field with mules at 6 a.m. We should not be eating that anymore. We should not be eating high-fat food, high-density food, but we still are. And we have an obesity problem, a terrible obesity problem, diabetic problem, but this is partly because of our poverty, because we were... The agricultural policy was changed during the Nixon administration by Earl Butz, and his idea was that he wanted to feed everyone cheaply. And so the mantra was, get big or get out. And so that's when we got all this agribusiness starting, and we lost our small farmers. We still don't have our small farmers. And there's a lot of legal things. For example, you can raise chickens, but you can't process them and sell them. It's illegal to do that. So we're working on these things because we're transitioning from the cornerstone of our economy, which was tobacco. We lost our tobacco subsidy. And that's another controversial thing that is misunderstood. You know, why don't you all raise soybeans? Well, because tobacco has a support price. You can raise 5 acres of tobacco. They limit how much tobacco you can raise and make $10,000. If you raise that in corn, you're probably going to go in the hole. So it was the way that farmers could hold on to their farms. And now we're diversifying from tobacco. We kept some of our money in the buyout, and we're diversifying and having organic farms, and things are changing. There's some, you know, really progressive areas. Berea, Kentucky is one of them. There's some places in Louisville, some farms. So things are getting better in terms of what you can eat. We also have it's such a beautiful environment. We have some Hollywood people living there, and they can afford to go out to the fancy restaurants. And so we have some really nice restaurants with heirloom vegetables. And so things are getting better. But if you are poor, you're eating out of the middle aisle, and you're eating food that's trucked in from California, and you're not eating food that's grown locally because farmers, it's really hard to make a living. However, we do have a salad there that I think that everybody should have.
To hear the recipe.
Okay. Death by salad. At Kathy's Country Kitchen in Stanton, Kentucky, you start your meal with a salad. You can choose tossed, pear, macaroni salad, potato salad, deviled egg salad, cornbread salad, strawberry pretzel salad. Strawberry pretzel salad is a local favorite, and here's how you make it. You break up a large package of pretzels, melt a stick of butter, and mix it in with your crushed pretzels. Add a cup of nuts and a few tablespoons of sugar. You punch that down in a Pyrex pan and bake it for 10 minutes at 350 degrees. In the meantime, you make 2 packages of strawberry Jell-O with as much sugar as you can possibly dissolve. Add your frozen strawberries, and you refrigerate that. Then, you mix a container of Cool Whip with an 8-ounce package of cream cheese and 1/2 cup of confectioner's sugar. You spread that mixture evenly on top of your cooled, crushed pretzels. Then you pour your half-gel Jell-O over top of that and put it in the refrigerator to set till dinner time. Now, people, this is not a salad. But at Kathy's Country Kitchen, it's on the salad list, so you might order it anyway. Then you have your catfish dinner with yeast rolls or Johnny cakes, mashed potatoes with brown or white gravy, corn pudding, and of course, fried green tomatoes. Now it's time for desserts. There's the usual southern list, butterscotch cream pie, chocolate cream pie, banana pudding, and at the bottom, the actual dessert that you will choose. Yellow cake with warm caramel sauce. The yellow cake of Kathy's Country Kitchen has the same density and longevity as the uranium yellow cake used to make fuel for nuclear reactors. It has a half-life of about 1,000 years. Except that instead of being used to make a bomb or nuclear fuel, this yellow cake goes in your stomach. And once you eat it, your bliss is short-lived. You become extremely ill with an insulin shock reaction on your way back down Levee Road. You want to die. You swear you will never eat again. But next time, when your waiter says, yellow cake with caramel sauce, it's like a cat charming a bird. You want it. And as soon as you get better, you'll order it again. On my way back down Levee Road, I look around at my hometown. I see that we are fat, we are sick, and we are hungry. And I'm wondering what the heck happened.
Thank you. That's a very good description. I don't know if I want to try making that recipe, though.
But I tell you what you do want is to have yellow cake with caramel sauce, but split it like 10 ways.
10 ways, right.
It's really good.
I want to get to the issue of coal and what it's doing to Appalachia in our last 5 minutes. You describe yourself as living in a third world land in a first world country, and I assume that's part of the issue of the devastation that coal is doing. Can you describe some of that?
Yes, it's very offensive to some people when I say it's a third world land in a first world country. But how I identify that is that we're rich in all these natural resources. People come in who are coal operators. I'm not talking about the local people who make money, which fewer and fewer of them, because you're running a drag line, not a coal mine. And they take the coal out of the land. They push the top of the mountain into the valley, onto people's houses. This operation goes 24 hours a day. You're seeing lights and noise and dynamite 24 hours a day. The roads are ruined by these heavy coal trucks. There are all kinds of accidents that happen because the roads are ruined, traffic fatalities. And say you own a house that's worth $60,000, your foundation cracks, your well dries up. What do you think it costs then? What do you think the selling value is? Coal company buys it.
For nothing.
Mm-hmm. So this is why it's a third world land. They take all the coal and then they leave.
So you're telling me they actually blow off the tops of mountains?
Honey, that's what I'm telling you. And then they've buried 2,000 miles of streams and rivers. The coal slurry, they have these impoundments that like sit above high schools that leak all the time. They violate the Clean Water Act every day and pay the fines. And what they do with the mountaintop is they grade it off. They spray invasive species on it so that it will take root, or they spray grass on it. It does not grow. You should see pictures of it. Very bare. And so although they do some reclamation, they are moving on.
Wasn't there a piece of legislation, a federal piece of legislation, that was supposed to protect the air and decrease the pollutants?
Yes, ma'am. And all you have to do is pay the fine. And certain administrations are in the pocket of coal. Certain Kentucky politicians get money from coal. And so it is up to people like me to spread the word. The Sierra Club is fantastic. What the mining depends on is a permit. And so the Sierra Club will fight to pull the permit, and then they can't mine in a certain area. And then they will fight and get the permit back. But that's what you do if you pull the permit. And there's OVEC, Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition. They work indefatigably toward that. And we're going to win. We're going to win. But our mountains are being torn down.
Well, the urgency of your message is certainly expressed in the last piece of your CD, Clean Coal, Big Lie. And I'd like to play an excerpt from that.
Yes,
please, for the end of this show.
That sounds wonderful.
So Obama's calling for 80% clean energy by 2035. And he included clean coal in that list. By now, anybody with a sense God gave a goose knows that coal is not clean. But then they say, they always say, well, the good thing about coal is that it's cheap. And when they say that, it sounds like they're saying that my life is cheap. That whole mountain ranges, the Blue Ridge, the Allegheny, and the Great Smoky Mountains are cheap. My whole culture is not worth saving. So anybody says to you, clean coal, anybody says to you, cheap coal, you only have to say, big lie.
With the description of all that you have told us about the devastation of what coal and the coal industry is doing, how do you not get discouraged?
By doing my work, by working every day like a workaholic, and believing that what I'm doing is educational, is moving, by caring about it. I believe in it. We have another issue in Kentucky, which is a lot of underground pipelines are blowing up. And I made a short video about that. I was in a pipeline accident, and that pipeline blew up again 50 years later. These are natural gas underground pipelines, not monitored well. And when there was a gas line that blew up in San Bruno, California, that we got some legislation, but it was watered down. And so we have that problem in Kentucky, and my video is being used to help block what's called the Bluegrass Pipeline, which is Kentucky's Keystone XL pipeline. It is proposed to be built to carry fracking effluvia through our state with no benefit to our state in those old exploding pipelines.
That exploded twice in 50 years?
No, that explode regularly. The same one, the one that burned me, exploded again 50 years later. One exploded 2 weeks ago. One exploded last summer. They explode a lot. One exploded in Jeffersonville, and that's in my home county. So they want to repurpose some of those lines for this thing. It's going to be fine. Don't worry. So they're using my video, and maybe you can put my video on the website here, and that shows, guess who blocked the legislation? A Kentucky senator.
I don't know if you've thought of this, and I don't want to be overly morbid, but it seems that for many people to live in Appalachia is to live with a familiarity with death. So I'm going to ask you, what would you want written on your headstone?
I told you I was sick.
Thank you so much, CD. I'm so glad that you were able to come to Humboldt and share some of your wisdom and your poetry with us.
Well, it's great. I love it here.
Oh, good.
I'm all over it.
Maybe you'll come back.
I would love that.
You have been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Corinne Fragoni. If you want more information about C.D. Collins, you can go to her website, www.cdcollins.com. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to our executive producer and engineer, Kathleen Marshall, and to our audio editor, Beth Rogers. To listen to this program again in the next 2 weeks, go to khsu.org, click on Web Audio, then Audio Archives. You can also listen to this show anytime on Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives, where you can view the upcoming schedule and post listener comments. Visit our blog at www.khsuwomen.wordpress.com. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.
Many of the stories were inspired by my family history, notably my grandparents' involvement in the Communist Party.
That's Molly Antipole talking about her newly published book of short stories, The Un-Americans. Winner of the National Book Foundation's 5 Under 35 Award, Molly joins me, your host, Kathleen Marshall, to talk about her inspiration and the stories themselves on the next Through the Eyes of Women every Monday afternoon at 1:30 right here on KHSU.
Next time on Art Waves.
Film is such a, it's all-inclusive. It's a team, and that's really cool. I like working on a team.
Local Filmmakers Night with George Nelson and...
The world that you're looking at, behind it or in front of it, it's not important. It's what's on the screen, which is just an image, a shadow.
Sean Powers, The Art of Puppetry. I'm Wendy Butler, and that's on Art Waves this Tuesday, April 8th at 1:30 p.m. on KHSU.